Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment, I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. We're going to have our weekly chat about world events. This week, we talk about competing memos in Washington. We also talk about the Oxfam scandal in Britain. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This evening's program, as always, has been, as it has been for quite some time, pre-recorded to accommodate the sleeping schedule of our guest, our foreign editor. That is Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin the evening with you, Tom, I'm looking forward to hearing first about Valentine's and Ash Wednesday. But let's start off with the weather there in London. And good evening to you.
Good evening. Could we talk about something other than the weather? It's just so depressing to talk about depressing weather.
Is this winter typical winter weather for you?
Oh, it is very wet and cold.
Oh, well.
Very wet and cold. As soon as I finish talking to you, I'm going downstairs and building a nice fire in the fireplace.
That sounds warm and cozy, particularly on this Valentine's Day and actually Valentine's evening for you. So let's start off with Valentine's, and then I want to get to Ash Wednesday. How active is Valentine's there in the United Kingdom or in Europe? Is this a big holiday or big event?
Let me just start by sending all my love to you, Lockwood, and everyone there at WTKF and WJNC, and of course, all the listeners, who I know they all agree with me, they just can't bring themselves to do it.
Oh.
But having said that, it's every bit as big as it is in America. You know, you cannot get a table in any restaurant. The price of flowers and chocolates goes through the roof. Absolutely. It's very much like it is in America.
All right. And of course, a coincidence of the moon, quite frankly, because it's a lunar event. And that, of course, being Ash Wednesday and the beginning of Lent. Curious about that in the United Kingdom and Europe. And particularly, well, I want to start with the whole concept of Shrove Tuesday and Mardi Gras and things of this nature. And of course, all the we'll use the word celebration prior to Lent, the beginning of Lent. How involved is that there in the European community and in the United Kingdom?
Well, not big here in the UK. We do have what's called Pancake Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Where everyone's supposed to eat a pancake.
Right. Sure, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Some countries, it's much bigger. There's a big Mardi Gras in, not huge, but there's a sort of Mardi Gras celebration in Venice where there are masked balls and things. There is also in Germany, especially in Bavaria and the Rhine region. And in Germany, it used to be, I don't know if it's still the case, that you cannot sue for divorce for adultery committed during Mardi Gras, or what they call the Fasching.
So this is during because of the beginning of Lent, I guess, and the religious nature of it. Okay, and then quickly, this being Ash Wednesday, are churches fill at this time of year there in the United Kingdom, and then of course in Europe? I mention that as every time. Are the churches very busy with Ash Wednesday?
No, it's like almost every other church day or church celebration. Europe is much more secular than the United States, and we treat Lent almost as a secular event. There are promises not to eat, which everyone breaks. There are promises not to drink, which everyone breaks. And that's about it.
Well, you mentioned this, and we won't belabor it, but much of the European community is heavily secular. Is the church not quite as revered in the European communities as they are in the States, I would argue? And of course, I think you have a good background on that, being an expat yourself. But I'm curious, what is the religious nature of the European community?
About 15% of the population are regular churchgoers.
Wow.
Which compares to, I think, 65 to 70 in the U.S.
Yes, very interesting. That's a note of interest there. Tom Arms with us from lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio this evening here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, one other quick note before we get into more serious conversation, and that, of course, is the Olympics and Olympics coverage. Is that generating a lot of interest there in the United Kingdom and in Europe? I would think that in the Netherlands and the northern climes, Germany, Austria, where there's a lot of snow skiing and, of course, French, you've got the French version of French Alps as well. But just curious, is there much interest and are able, are folks paying attention to it predominantly by watching it on TV?
Oh, yes. Yes, a lot of people are watching it. And I think it varies from country to country as to what sports or which sports are covered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're absolutely right. The French and the Swiss, they always have, and the Austrians and Germans, they always have good ski teams. The Scandinavians have very good cross-country skiers.
Mm-hmm.
And the British always seem to do well at figure skating.
It'll be interesting to see how this is all pans out. We're talking about the events there in South Korea. It's related to that, and this is a little bit on the political side. There's been a lot of discussion here in the States related to how Vice President Pence, shall we say, communicated or failed to communicate with the sister of Kim Jong-un, who is there, the first, as a matter of fact, I think she is the first member of the ruling family to visit South Korea since 1940-something, quite some time. My question is, what was the coverage of that? Was there any note taken related to the participation of the North Koreans in the Olympics there in South Korea?
There has been a lot of note taken of the North Korean participation and whether or not they should be part of the South Korean team or separate and things like that. Not a great deal of attention was paid to Vice President Pence. There has been a lot paid to the possibility of a meeting between the North and South Korean presidents.
So they're seeing this as much a from a political perspective as an athletic perspective, then, I gather.
Yes.
I think that's interesting because here in the States, there's very little given in so far as the relationship between North and South Korea. It's noted, of course, that the U.S. has been strong supporters of South Korea. It's just that the focus here in the States has been, as much as anything, overwhelmed by the athletic endeavors. And with the exception of the political pundits talking about it, which have made a big deal out of the fact that the sister of Kim Jong-un is in attendance, and they've used terms like the Ivanka of North Korea. Did that description ever show up in the European press by any chance? I find it kind of humorous.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it.
But it's perceived that basically this whole Olympic endeavor may have some political overtones there, even in Europe. I am intrigued that you're paying attention to the Olympics because we don't see the sense of engagement there from the European community, and particularly there of the United Kingdom. But again, it's just a matter of perception. All right, we've got with us this evening Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Right after this break, we're going to get down to some really heated political conversation. I shouldn't say heated, but a very focused political conversation. We've got to get onto the issue of what the news coverage is for the U.S. when it comes to events politically here. So stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with the expanded Look Ahead World Analysis for the week beginning the 21st of February. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. The President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, is off for a tour of the Balkans from next Sunday. He will visit six countries, Serbia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Montenegro, Kosovo, Macedonia and Albania, to discuss plans for them to become full EU members by the year 2025. The Balkans, Eastern Europe and Brexit will all be on the agenda at a series of EU meetings next week. They start with the Eurozone finance ministers on Monday, and then on Friday it is the turn of the European heads of government meeting in Brussels. Meanwhile, the British House of Lords starts properly discussing the legislation required for Britain to leave the EU. The Lords cannot block legislation, but as a body it is opposed to Brexit and is likely to take every opportunity to amend and delay. Donald Trump is off to his Florida golfing resort, Mar-a-Lago, for the long President's Day weekend. The president will be pondering the negative reaction from environmentalists and economists to his infrastructure plans. Trump will also be working on the U.S. negotiating position for the seventh round of NAFTA talks, which start on Sunday. After the last round, Mexico and Canada expected President Trump to announce American withdrawal. But the sides have agreed to keep talking for the time being. Meanwhile, American Jewish leaders are in Israel Monday through Thursday to meet political leaders. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will be quizzed about recent corruption charges. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas will be on the other side of the world in New York. He will address the UN Security Council on Tuesday, and he will talk about the Trump administration's to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. South Africa is enjoying its first week without President Jacob Zuma next week, and Cyril Ramaphosa will be celebrating his first week as president. He will be thrown into the deep end as Wednesday is Budget Day in South Africa. Amnesty International publishes its annual report on the world human rights situation on Thursday. There will be a press conference in Washington the day before. The report is expected to focus on Trump's immigration policies, problems in Rohingya, the Middle East, and Africa, and the refusal of East European countries to accept refugees. Egypt's presidential election campaign officially kicks off on Saturday. The actual election will be held on the 26th to 28th of March. Incumbent President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is expected to easily secure another 4 years in office. Djibouti stages elections to its National Assembly on Friday. All 65 seats have to be filled. The president's party is expected to win almost all of them. And that was next week's News Today from LookAhead.com. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, where it's a little dreary and a little cold, but he's doing well. He's standing up under the challenges of the day. Tom, let's talk here for a moment about the coverage again. We're curious about the coverage of the events in the United States, particularly let's start with the issue of the Democrat memo and how is that being covered? Of course, we're talking about the memo related to concerns associated with what portion of the FBI's relationship is with Democrat Party and the concerns related to the FISA court. And I'm curious how many in Europe have a sense of what the FISA court is all about. But what has been the coverage of the recent application of memos related to unveiling information about the FBI?
Well, to start with, nobody can understand the FISA court at this end.
Okay.
But they are not reporting it quite as fully as I thought they would, but they are very critical of the administration. The Daily Telegraph, which is very conservative, said that Trump's decision not to release the Democratic memo is totally partisan and a grave cause for concern that the United States can be unified under a Trump presidency. And that's more or less the tone, but it didn't get a lot of column inches.
No,
it's almost as if, you know, it looks like a shrug of the shoulders over here. What do you expect? Sort of thing.
Now, the other question, of course, is did they cover the release of the Republican memo?
Yes, they did. They covered the release of the Republican memo.
Was it?
But. And they did cover the release of the Democrat memo. But, you know, as I said, it was almost like they were shrugging their shoulders and saying, well, you know, we don't expect it. We don't like it, but we don't expect any more from the White House.
Well, you know, the other aspect of it, what was the criticisms related to the Republican memo? Were they interested in that memo? And did it get significant?
Yes,
coverage?
They were.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was picked over in great detail.
Okay. Now you say that, and yet you said a few moments ago, there's not a great deal of understanding of the FISA court which of course accommodates the privilege of the Justice Department and of various security agencies to, if you will, surveil not only foreign individuals, but U.S. individuals. I find that interesting. The concept of a FISA court, the whole idea of surveillance, what is the opinion there in the United Kingdom and Europe? I don't think they've really gone into it.
It makes it, you know, it's like our discussions, Lockwood, we can only hit the high points and the highlights.
Right.
And I don't think they think it is totally relevant to what European audiences need to know.
Really? Well, that is what it's all about, is the privilege of these agencies to, if you will, take a great, I'm looking for it, freedom with certain privileges and rights in this country. I find that interesting in light of the fact that there's some, some criticism of the Democratic memo. And of course, the other aspect of it is that the president would not release it in its full form. He sent it back to the Democrats, asking them to redact portions that were considered to be a problem for national security. Is that understood there in the European press?
Oh, yes, that is understood. And I don't know how much of the Republican memo was redacted, if any. It wasn't really revealed much in the press here. As for FISA, you know, the issue for the Europeans is, did he or didn't he?
Well,
you know, that's the issue. Not whether or not the FBI exceeded its authority. It's more a question of, did Trump officials collude with Russians? That's the issue, as far as they're concerned, as far as the people in Europe are concerned.
Okay, not,
and I'm, they feel that the president, by refusing to release a rebuttal from the Democrats, is basically taking a partisan stand,
you know,
and protecting his back.
Well, that shows how to be very blunt, it shows the lack of understanding for the true story. The story has nothing to do, quite frankly, with the Russian collusion. It has everything to do with the privileges of the federal, the FBI. The other aspect of this, Tom, and we won't belabor this, it's been over almost a year now, more than a year, since this charge was first established. And there has been no, absolutely no proof or evidence that there was collusion. Now, granted, and we've got to get into this very briefly, the Russians have been attempting to insinuate themselves not only in U.S. elections, but elections around the world. I'm flabbergasted that there's an anticipation, if you will, from the European community that it will be proven, that it's almost they're just waiting for confirmation. Am I correct in my observation on that?
Yes, I think you probably are.
Wow.
And I think they're taking the view that Robert Mueller knows that he has to be absolutely certain before he releases anything. And so he's being very, very careful and thorough. That is the view that's being taken on this side of the Atlantic.
Okay, well, I think that's important. And what we're hearing here is, and of course, you know, my attitude is to throw my hands up. Well, then there's no sense in discussing the issue beyond that. We understand that there's an anticipation of guilt without any justification. All right, I want to talk about another item. And of course, we've talked about budgets and money and financial issues. The Trump infrastructure, you've made mention of this. Is that being covered there in the European press?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's mainly negative. Well, it's all negative.
Why?
On two counts, the financial and the environmental. The mass circulation newspapers are attacking it for basically being anti-environmentalist. The Guardian headline was, Trump's infrastructure plan is crumbling away. And oh, no, that's fine. FT, sorry. The Guardian headline was U.S. environment destroyed for roads and bridges. And basically they're saying, you know, the plan is to completely slash the EPA and the Department of Interior budget and use that money to pay for bridges. And also, one of the ways they would slash it is by cutting down the approval time needed to build roads and bridges, so that people won't have time to put forward proper environmental rebuttals and cases. From the financial point of view, the FT, as I already said, Trump's infrastructure plan is crumbling away, was their headline. And they can't see how it's going to work financially. Things like tolls, most people complain already about how high the tolls are, and they are very high in America compared to everywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they expect so much to come from private and state funding, especially the states. A lot of the states are worse off financially, says the FT, than the federal government. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is fascinating. In light of the fact that the U.S. does not go into quite the details, the U.S. media, the details of European politics and finances and structural issues, I find this fascinating that this is of significant interest to the European press. Why is that, Tom?
Well, it's because if you spend a lot of money in America, it's going to have an impact on economies elsewhere in the world. You are 25% of the world economy. And so when 25% of the world economy says it's going to spend another $1.5 trillion, that is going to have an impact on the rest of the world.
I would assume a positive impact on the rest of the world, because it's commerce, it's enterprise.
Yes, that's true. But it's potentially a negative impact as well, if you have to borrow a lot of the money you fail to pay it back.
Okay, the national debt, the U.S. national debt then is of concern to the European community.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right. I can accommodate. All right. Wrapping it up with you on the issue of infrastructure, obviously the topic of the military budget. Well, I'll tell you what, let me take a quick break. I want to come back to that very quickly, and I want to move on to other items. As a matter of fact, that will segue beautifully into other conversations we're going to talk about with Israel. Joining us this afternoon, of course, or actually this evening, and nearly bedtime for him, as a matter of fact, probably asleep as this is airing live on the Talk Station. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us this evening, as we are airing this, he is sleeping away, counting sheep, probably. There he goes. He's counting them as we speak. We've pre-recorded this because it's almost midnight, his time in London. But Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Tom, we were chatting a few moments ago, and I won't belabor this topic too much longer, about the economy of the U.S. and, of course, the president's budget. And I'm curious, any concerns, any interest about the efforts on the part of the U.S. government to expand or increase its military budget? Has there been much discussion or conversation there in the United Kingdom and European press?
Yes, it's really just starting. There is a concern that we're at the beginning of a new nuclear arms race. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned that last week.
Right.
And again, it comes down to, if you and I remember the Johnson era when they had guns and butter.
Right, right.
The Great Society, we were going to fight Vietnam and we were going to feed the poor. And it seems as if a lot of people think Trump is doing the same thing, and that this the Johnson Great Society led to a period of very high inflation, and the fear is that the same thing could happen in the U.S. But yes, there'd be a short-term advantage, mm-hmm. which will probably help Trump in the midterm elections, but then we'll have to pay the price after that.
Okay. I understand where you're coming from on that. And of course, you mentioned a few moments ago about the role that the U.S. economy plays in the world economy as well. All right, let's move on to, and we're going to get to this in relationship to the military investment in the U.S. here in a few moments again. But I want to shift to a story that's also being covered here in the United States, and that's related to Benjamin Netanyahu and the fact that his own country is looking at the possible indictment. And I'm curious, how is that getting covered there in the European press? And is there any, if you will, comparisons between that and the stories that are happening here in the U.S.?
No comparisons as yet.
Okay.
It is being given front page coverage. Netanyahu is not popular here in Europe. There are concerns. There's some reports in the Israeli press. I read some stories in the Israeli press and on Al Jazeera. They were concerned that Netanyahu might be more aggressive towards Iran, Syria, and Lebanon as a means of distracting attention away from the alleged corruption scandal. And people are very concerned about it.
Let's talk about that in relationship to, first, why is Benjamin Netanyahu not well received in the European community?
Because they see him as inflexible. Inflexible towards the Palestinians, that he doesn't want to compromise. He didn't really want to talk about a two-state solution. He doesn't want to stop settlements okay. on the West Bank.
All right. So, so you're seeing this as a hardliner. All right. Let's look at the issue of that fear of war involving Israel, because we've got to bring the U.S. into this conversation as well. What is the relationship with Israel and Syria? I mean, Syria has shown some efforts to encroach in Israel, and there's some grave concerns about the Iranian relationship with Syria. So does that not concern the European community as well?
It does, but Israel is very isolated in this respect. Wow. It really has no friends. In fact, some people say not even the United States is being friendly towards Israel on the issue of Lebanon and Syria. And the reason is because Israel is focused entirely on the threat from Iran and Hezbollah. The United States has the additional issue of jihadists, the ISIS and al-Qaeda. And that is the Trump administration's primary concern. The problem of Hezbollah, the problem of Iran in Lebanon, is important to the Trump administration, but it is secondary.
Okay, but what about
to the fight against the terrorists?
All right, I understand.
At least that's how it's been being seen among the Middle East analysts that I've been reading.
Okay, and of course, you just mentioned a moment ago that Israel has been isolated from the European community. But now, wait a second. We have a situation which I mentioned a few moments ago, Syria attempting to encroach in Israel. As a matter of fact, they shot down an Israeli plane. Now, on top of that, the U.S. has destroyed a Russian tank that's involved or engaged in Syria, apparently took on the U.S. Contingent there in Syria. And now we have France and Russia playing roles in this, and Iran. What's going on in Syria, and why did President Macron go so far as to say that he would be prepared to respond or react militarily to Syria should they use chemical weapons? Where did that come from?
Well, he's only repeating, of course, what the Trump administration has said. You have to remember that France regards itself as having a historic role in Syria.
Okay.
It was a French colony. And they feel they have a particular interest in Syria. They were the first European country to sign up with the U.S. In airstrikes against the Syrians and against jihadists.
Okay.
So they see themselves as taking the lead for Europe.
All right.
On top of that, Macron sees himself as taking a lead in the defense field for Europe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so this is an opportunity for him to sort of go to the forefront, if you like.
All right. Now, what about the role?
So I think there's some political issues here as well, wider political issues.
Okay. And of course, we've mentioned of President Emmanuel Macron of France interested in taking a leadership role in the European community as well, the European Union. But now we've got Russia playing in this along with Iran. Is there some concern that this could heat up very quickly and get out of control?
Yes, there is concern. And there have been articles. There was an article in the Jerusalem Post. There was an article in Mariv. There was an article in Al Jazeera saying just that. I think the one in Mariv, I'm not certain it was Mariv, said that they had spoken to one defense analyst who said there was a 97% chance of a conflict being of a new conflict.
All right. We are going to watch this with interest. And of course, we're chatting with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening on Viewpoints Around the World. All right. I'm going to move to another item totally. Oxfam scandal. What is this, Tom?
Oxfam. I don't know if you've ever heard of Oxfam. It is a very big international charity based in the UK. Mm-hmm. It was started in 1942. Its purpose is humanitarian aid and development around the world. It has a budget. It spends about $500 million a year in humanitarian aid. It operates collecting money in 19 different countries. They have shops everywhere.
Okay.
They're a bit like in Britain, they're a bit like the equivalent of Goodwill in America when it comes to shops.
All right. Now, how big a scandal is this?
Well, this is huge. They become, if you like, a sort of victim of the Me Too scandal in a way, and that it has emerged that their people in Haiti were basically using their positions to have sex.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
now it was with prostitutes.
Right.
They paid the prostitutes to have sex with them. But basically, you know, the idea is that these are people in a position of authority. You know, when given the situation Haiti's in, it's almost as if they're running the country. And so we're going to have sex.
All right.
With your prostitutes. This was covered up by Oxfam.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely covered up, but it was covered up enough to make it a scandal. And the government is threatening to cut off the money they were giving to Oxfam, because I don't know if you know it, but all governments, a lot of their aid money is channeled through charities because the charities have more people on the ground.
Right.
And so they were going to cut off their money. They're talking about cutting off their money, which is 10% of Oxfam's revenue.
All right. Well,
but not only that, but Minnie Driver, who is a sort of ambassador for Oxfam, says she won't do anything for them anymore. People are not going to their stores. They really are in big danger. Now, this is a lot of there are hundreds of millions of people around the world who depend on this aid from Oxfam.
This is very quickly, because we're running out of time, but very quickly, was this discovered by government agency or discovered?
No, okay. It was journalists from the Times newspaper.
OK, I'm just curious about how it came to be known. Let's move very quickly. I've got about a minute and a half to go with you, Tom. Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com, Look Ahead Radio. Australian government investigating banks very quickly.
Yeah. The banks have basically been too successful. They've been more or less untouched by, you know, what happened from 2008 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the claim is they've been untouched because they've been screwing the customers in order to avoid any problems. Money laundering,
wow.
Setting interbank interest rates between themselves, which you're not supposed to do, and putting out dodgy mortgages and things like that.
I can't believe they don't have Dodd-Frank. We'll have to send Dodd-Frank over to Australia. Very quickly, How far along is this investigation? Are they just started?
It's just started. Right. The prime minister, they first called Fortin in September 2016, and he's only just agreed to it.
We will be following with this with interest. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio sharing with us that we may have the opportunity to export Dodd-Frank to Australia, of all places. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. It was a little difficulty in the Balkans in the summer of 1914 that resulted in the deaths of 16 million European and American soldiers by November 1918. It was the breakup of the Yugoslav Federation that led to a Balkan civil war from 1991 until the turn of the millennium that caused 140,000 deaths and 4.4 million refugees and internally displaced people. Two very good lessons from history to encourage the European Union to welcome the six Balkan states, Serbia, Montenegro, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Croatia, Albania, and Macedonia, to join the European club. The EU Foreign Affairs Commissioner, Federica Mogherini, has for over a year been commuting between Brussels and the Balkans, negotiating accession terms. Next Sunday, European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker sets off on a six-day tour to finalize details for the Balkan states to start on the road to full EU membership by 2025. In May, the EU Heads of Government Summit in Sofia is expected to act as a rubber stamp. For Brussels, the goal is political stability on its southeastern border and a block on Russian and Chinese expansion. But there's an economic and financial price to pay. This was underscored by Johannes Hahn, the EU Commissioner for Enlargement, when he said that the EU must not repeat mistakes of the past. Reading between the lines, he meant the difficulties that were created by the absorption of the East European states after the collapse of the Soviet Union. The EU rushed in to fill the political vacuum, and the East Europeans welcomed the West to escape the Russian bear hug. But their absorption has created difficulties. The free movement of people principle resulted in hundreds of thousands of Polish workers flooding the British job market, one of the major reasons for the Brexit vote result. On top of that, totalitarian nationalistic political roots have spawned right-wing populist governments who balk at EU rules regarding an independent judiciary, movement of people, and a free press. This has left Brussels with a sticky problem. Whether or not the Visegrad Four, as they have become known, should be allowed to even stay in the club. The Balkans' political history is similar. Oppressed by the Austro-Hungarians and the Ottomans, racked by civil wars before the First World War, and then becoming the spark that caused the First World War, unstable in the 1920s and 30s, and a united communist state until the death of Tito. It is a shaky past, and at the moment the six countries do not meet the anti-corruption requirements or those involving a free press and independent judiciary. Then there's the financial factor. The EU will be taking on six countries with an average income per head of $16,800 a year. This compares to $40,000 for the Eurozone countries. This means that the Balkan states will be net recipients of EU funds for many, many, many years to come, at a time when, because of Brexit, the EU will have lost 10% of its income. This financial fact of life is unlikely to go down well with the North European taxpayers or with those in the South who will now have to share the aid pot. Let's not forget the principle of the free movement of people, one of the key pillars of the European Union. It is only natural that an Albanian earning $11,800 a year, the average income in that country, will want to take advantage of EU membership by finding a job in Germany, Austria, Luxembourg, or the Netherlands. It is just as inevitable that there would be a backlash in those countries against Balkan immigrants. The threat from China and Russia is real. The Chinese have been wooing the Balkan states by pouring billions of dollars into the region in the form of both aid and investment. The Russians, on the other hand, have been destabilizing the region. They already have strong historic ties with Serbia, where almost half of the population prefer Russian to EU links. And Moscow has been accused of sponsoring a failed 2016 coup in Montenegro. As usual, it is a balancing act. There are good reasons for and good reasons against Balkan membership. What is certain that it has to be carefully considered.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And we're always looking forward to this last segment. We've got just a few minutes left. I want to touch on one quick item very quickly with you, Tom, and then we'll get to a few other last minute, shall we say, twists of the stories. Other cities facing water problems, and we talked about this in relationship to South Africa last week. What other cities are facing water crises, and is this seen as a major concern worldwide?
Yes, it is. It's more than you'd realize, and not the ones you'd think of, and for different reasons. For instance, Miami is one.
All right.
Miami has rising sea levels,
right,
which are starting to flood the aquifers that normally provide them with fresh water.
Okay, that's Miami. What would be the other cities? I'm intrigued that you're paying attention.
Moscow. It's a problem of pollution left over from the Soviet era. It's reckoned that in Russia, half of their fresh water is polluted.
Wow. Okay.
Cairo, pollution in the Nile, increasing population and industrialization has polluted the Nile. And that is where they get all their water from, as we know, anyone who's studied ancient history.
Right.
Jakarta, rising sea levels. Once again, all the aquifers are being flooded. 40% of Jakarta now is below sea level.
Mm-hmm.
And the salt water is polluting the freshwater resources. Beijing, overpopulation and pollution. China as a whole has 20% of the world population, but only 7% of its fresh water.
Wow. That's an interesting story. Okay, we won't have much time to go into greater details.
But yeah, there's a lot more, but we won't go into all of them.
All right, let's look at two other items. And I want to start off with an issue associated with Ethiopia and camels.
Yeah, it's the old versus the new.
Mm-hmm.
With Chinese money, the Ethiopian government has built a brand new railway, which was going to cut the travel time from Addis Ababa to the port in Djibouti from 2 days to 10 hours.
Wow.
The problem is they didn't take into account all the camel herders. And in just a month, 50 camels have been squashed.
Ooh.
Which brings us to Valentine's Day, because I love camels. You know, with his long eyelashes and
the big
lips.
And by the way, we've got to make mention of this. We first broke the story on the use of Botox and making camels prettier, I guess. And, of course, shortly thereafter.
If that was possible.
Yeah, exactly. Shortly thereafter, it was a major search item on Google, as we discovered some 2 days later. So it was all because people were listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. Okay, Tom, let's wrap it up with Valentine's. We started with it. Let's wrap it up.
Well, you know, it's not, today's not the big day. It's tomorrow.
Hmm. Really?
Tomorrow is International Single Awareness Day, which has been set up by everyone who doesn't have a Valentine, but also those who realize, as it says on in their blurb, that you can get chocolates and flowers a lot cheaper the day after.
Well, that's a good excuse for folks to that will be what is this now again? International Singles Day, is that correct?
International Single Awareness Day.
Single Awareness Day. Well, I would think that even for those of us who have yet to purchase anything for their Valentine's, could simply say, well, we want to be aware of those that are less fortunate than us. So this is a day we will recognize, and they will take advantage of the less expensive items for Valentine's. I think it's an excellent...
Okay, well, let me give you a converse argument, and that is that cheapskate approach could result in you being single, Tim.
Yeah, that's a good point. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, a very good evening to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.